Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So from the ages of 18 to 36, I was in a committed relationship. But then, long story short, we ended up getting divorced and I was thrust into the very unpleasant world of online dating. I tried a little OkCupid at one point and ended up meeting a really cute guy who was totally my type. He had lots of tattoos, he worked out, and he was at least a foot taller than me. But he also loved John Carpenter films and a bunch of horror movies too, which is a huge, huge passion of mine. And we chatted on and off for a month or so, but we lived an hour apart, so we waited until we were super sure that we wanted to hook up, and then made arrangements for the most romantic day of the year, Valentine's Day. It wasn't anything too fancy, we just went to a bar to shoot some pool, but then the drunker he got, the more this totally different side of him started to emerge. And it was one that I didn't enjoy at all. At one point, he starts pulling my hair. I'm guessing in a way that he thought was sexy and that I'd enjoy. Well, needless to say, it wasn't sexy, and I didn't enjoy it. And then 2 hours and two drinks in, and I was ready to just get the hell out of there. Then, when I asked him to give me a ride home, he tried to get me to do something that I really did not want to do. And I fought my way out of it, basically threatening to scream bloody murder and scramble to my car and drive home. I knew I was lucky that he let me go, and I had no intention of ever seeing this weirdo again. But then the next day, I'm getting my stuff ready for work and realized that I'd lost my ID somewhere.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight, enjoy the excitement, and play today at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I search my apartment. Nothing. I call the bar. Nothing. Then it slowly dawns on me that the creep I was with the night before was the one that had my ID. Either when it had accidentally fallen out of my purse during that struggle, or when he'd deliberately taken it for whatever godforsaken reason. But then, when I call him, he claims that he doesn't have it either. But he does have a lecture for me about how I'm a tease and that's why I'm single, because I just lead guys on. I just want my ID, but he denies that he has it, so screw it. I guess I'll just get another one. My lost ID shows up in my mailbox a week later in a plain envelope that had not been mailed. The idea that he was outside my house without my knowledge really creeped me out. It took me a good while to realize what had actually happened, to be honest. I went home and didn't tell anybody until a few days later. And then my friend was like, "Wait, so he tried to do what to you?" I was like, "Yeah, I guess I dodged a cannonball as opposed to a bullet." And then the day after the date that I had to contact him about the ID, it was a time when the $35 to replace it was actually a lot of money to me. So I called him, and he was so absolutely in his opinion that I had wronged him somehow by not hooking up with him in a crappy dive bar parking lot, and he said that I could have at least put out. I didn't do anything about it, I just never contacted him again. It's not like it hasn't happened before, just in more subtle versions. I never had anybody just try it. It was usually the kissing that turns into pressure to do something more. I've never had anyone forcibly try to make me do stuff with them or try to take my clothing off, just verbal and mental pressure. But anyway, I freely admit that I have terrible tastes in men, and that's why I'm currently celibate. I can't trust myself, and it took way too long to accept that, but I'm working on myself.
Hey guys, thanks so much for all the support. If you haven't subscribed to the channel yet, please feel free to do so.
When I first read Martin Luther's quote, "The devil can so completely assume the human form when he wants to deceive us," I thought he was talking about the real one, Lucifer. Despite watching the news of crimes daily, I only realized this was about evil in humans when I experienced it myself. "Excuse me, sir, are you Aiden?" I gently tapped the man's shoulder, hoping he was not the person I sought. Despite sitting at the same table my date had specified, he looked nothing like the pictures I had seen. To my dismay, he responded, "Yes, I am, and you must be Aurora. You look even more stunning in person than in your photos." I struggled to conceal my disappointment, and he seemed to notice my reaction, but still chose to disregard it. After thanking him for the compliment, I hesitantly took my seat before the waiter came and handed us the menus. However, before I could even get a chance to look at the menu to decide what I wanted to eat, he ordered for me without even asking. Such behavior is something I despise. No matter if I'm out with friends, family, or a date, it puts me in a bad mood. Though I refrained from voicing my displeasure, I quietly sipped my water as I waited for the Greek salad that had been selected for me, all the while lamenting my decision to agree to this date. Out of the blue, he apologized and explained that the photos he sent me were actually of his friend. He revealed that he had only done so because of his insecurities. "I met him on OkCupid a few days ago and have been chatting ever since. Initially, I was presented with a picture of a tall, muscular Latin man. However, upon meeting him in person, he appeared shorter than me and did not possess the Latin features I had expected." What put my mood off wasn't his looks or height, since my ex was also shorter than me, but the fact that he lied. At that moment, I felt deceived and apprehensive about the date. It felt fake to me, but I did not want to be impolite by leaving immediately, so I decided to finish the lunch, at least before I started ghosting him. As I was eating, he started asking me all these weird and awkward questions that were highly inappropriate. I told him I was uncomfortable answering them, but he took it lightly and started laughing as he said I was making a big deal out of nothing. I wasn't a fool not to notice all the red flags he kept dropping on me. It was becoming increasingly clear that things could escalate and become dangerous if I didn't remove myself from his company. After finishing the meal, I got up, saying, "Thanks for the meal. I'll be leaving now. It was a pleasure meeting you, though." He scrunched his forehead in confusion and unexpectedly grabbed my hand, uttering, "What are you doing? Our date is not over yet. You ought to come over to my place." I yanked my hand back in shock and horror. What's wrong with this man? We barely conversed enough for me to feel obligated to adhere to his request. I quickly invented an excuse, citing an urgent matter at home, and exited without causing a commotion. Despite my attempts to evade him, he persisted in his pursuit. He made another grab for me, but I managed to dodge him. As I continued walking away, he followed me, demanding I stop. I reiterated that I couldn't stay, but he responded with a barrage of insults. He accused me of being inexperienced in dating and insulted my appearance, insisting that I should feel grateful for the opportunity to be with him. Though I was tempted to retaliate with equally cutting remarks, I refrained from causing a scene and kept walking, determined to put as much distance between us as possible. He didn't stop following me. His footsteps grew louder and closer as he shouted that I would regret it if I didn't stop. I was highly disturbed and scared at this point, praying for him to give up. But suddenly, he shoved me roughly from behind before blocking my path. My heart was thumping so loud that I feared it would come through my throat. I wished for someone to notice us and come to my rescue, but people kept walking by without paying attention. His gaze swept from my forehead to my toes as he scrutinized me. Suddenly, he burst out laughing and remarked, "You look like you're about to cry." His demeanor gave off a disturbing vibe, and he leaned toward my ear to whisper what he wanted to do to me. He told me that this was nothing in comparison to how much I would cry even more by the time he was done with me. I shot panicked glances at the people walking, but it was useless. As he was about to say something else, adrenaline rushed through my veins as I gathered the courage to kick him in his groin and run toward the station without looking back. Tears started flowing through my eyes as my legs sped up and reached the station. I hadn't eaten or drunk anything since morning and was on the urge to faint when someone grabbed me, which made me jump in fear that it was Aiden again. Instead, it was a middle-aged woman asking me if I was okay. My swollen, tear-filled eyes, red and sniffling nose, and disheveled look didn't let me say anything. And she started patting me on the head, saying everything was fine. She led me to the nearest cubicle, and I sat there for about half an hour shaking, and the woman just stayed beside me to ensure I was okay. When I realized I was wailing in front of a stranger, I immediately apologized for wasting her time. "It's okay. You don't have to apologize. It's not your fault. I was the one who chose to help you," she said politely as she flashed me with an angelic smile. I thanked her before heading inside and taking the metro to my place. I deleted Aiden, and my WhatsApp chat blocked his number and deleted all the dating apps from my phone. I spent days locked up inside my apartment, fearing he would find my place and come for me. However, it's a relief that nothing of such sort happened. I didn't meet anyone for days and started avoiding blind dates or meeting alone with strangers.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This happened years ago, and to this day, it's the worst first date experience I have ever had. My friends still try to set me up with people for being single for this long, but I turn each one down. While she did not meet me when Aiden threatened me, that woman who offered me solace and water still felt like an angel. She dropped whatever she was doing, whether urgent or not, and made sure I was okay, unlike those who saw me in danger and still chose to ignore me. People like her are rare these days, and I pray they don't get extinct, because it would be the end of humanity then.
No movie will ever compare to the hell that I've gone through the last year. The ordeal seems like it's been one long waking nightmare. It all began normally enough. I just recently got out of a long-term relationship and wasn't looking for anything serious. I figured that I'd give Tinder a shot. It didn't take long for me to get a few matches. I chose the hottest one and we agreed to meet a week later. The date went so well that we decided to do it again, and this became a regular thing until the fourth date. It was beginning to look as if it may grow into something more in spite of my original intentions. As the fourth date wrapped up, I invited her back to my place for a drink. She agreed, and things soon got hot and heavy, as they say. We were mere seconds away from taking things all the way when she broke down. I was confused. I'm not an aggressive partner, and her behavior up to that point had been very receptive. I asked what was wrong, and she said that she had been assaulted by a previous boyfriend. It had been several years since she thought that she had moved past it. I felt bad for her, yet still kind of frustrated, and she got up and dressed quickly. I'll admit, it was, like I said, frustrating, but there was little I could do, and I understood where she was coming from. I called her an Uber, and she left me with a difficult decision to make. After a long, sleepless night, I decided to just kind of end things there. Some of you reading this may call me cruel, but I couldn't really see another option. Things appeared to just be at an impasse, you know? I wasn't going to wait around until she determined that she was ready, and I sure wasn't going to pressure her into anything, obviously. I told myself that it was for the best. I'd never wanted to jump right into another relationship so quickly. That wouldn't benefit either of us, and I broke things off as kindly as I could. That night never came up. I stress how I'd felt I'd rushed into things too quickly, and naturally she was a bit upset, but gave no indication of actually being angry. I wished her a happy future and just bid her a goodbye. And normally, that's where it would have ended. I took a month off from dating and Tinder and all that, and when I came back, I matched with a beautiful graduate student just looking to have a good time. This is more of what I was looking for. We met for drinks and hit it off. I went home happy with a spring in my step and a gleam in my eyes, they say. And maybe 2 days passed when I got a call from a neighbor. He informed me that there were leaflets posted all around our neighborhood, calling me an attempted predator. I thought this was his idea of some sick joke, and definitely not a good one. I laughed, but he assured me that this wasn't a laughing matter. I demanded proof, and a few minutes later he came to my door with a bright yellow piece of paper, and it claimed the following. On the night of Friday, November 19th, 2021, I was invited on a dinner date with Mr. My Name. After being plied with many glasses of wine, I was pressured into joining him at his home. Although I was clearly unable to consent, Mr. My Name attempted to coax me into his bed. When I refused his advances, he became enraged and threw me onto the street in the middle of the night. Please make sure all your female friends are made aware of the danger they may face by dating this manipulative monster. I can't begin to describe the anger that I felt in that moment. It was made worse when the neighbor asked me if it was true. Of course it wasn't, but when someone asks that type of question, it's a good indication that they believe it. Rather than strangle him, I did my best to assure him it was not. And his reception was less than convincing, but I had more pressing problems at that second. I had to get all those flyers, or whatever you call them, before any more impressionable idiots saw them. I spent most of the day pulling them from light poles and bulletin boards all over town. I'm still not sure if I got them all, and I counted over 200 when all was said and done. Then, out of nowhere, I discovered that I had been banned from Tinder after someone filed a complaint against me. My life felt like it was spiraling out of control, and I was desperate to stop it any way I could. What came next was probably the biggest mistake I'd made during this entire ordeal. I worked myself into such a muddle I did the one thing I shouldn't have. I contacted her via text message to confront her. She promised to retract her claims if I agreed to meet her face to face. And I took the bait like a sucker and drove to her house. We sat down at her kitchen table where she explained how hurt she felt. I wasn't interested in hearing any of it, but I was willing to suffer to save my good name. While she did so, she kept a glass of wine close at hand. She had clearly been drinking even before I arrived. After an hour, everything appeared to be handled. As I prepared to leave, she began coming on to me, and I mean in a very obvious manner, and I almost gave in, but then I remembered our previous problem and I shut her down. She was not pleased. She hissed and walked off toward the kitchen. I figured that she was getting some more wine, and it seemed like a great time to sneak away. I was putting on my jacket when a crash came from the kitchen. I hurried in to see what the matter was and was met by a shrill screeching. She rushed towards me with a stem of a broken wine glass and stabbed me with it. She retracted the jagged stem from the wound and snarled like some freaking animal. I was in shock, and I froze for a brief moment, unsure of how to react. Then she lunged at me again, just missing, and I took off. She pursued me out to my car and pounded on it as I sped off, and I just drove straight to the hospital, calling 911 as I drove. I informed the dispatcher which hospital I could be found at if the police needed to speak to me, and sure enough, an officer arrived as I was being treated for my injury. Luckily for me, she hadn't hit any major arteries or organs or anything like that, and the cop let me know that my assailant had been arrested, but what came next was a complete surprise.
What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I was shocked to learn that she had a previous conviction for stalking and assault, and I surmised that it was a similar situation. Monday came around, and despite what I had hoped, my attacker was given bail. She paid and was out in time for dinner. I was furious and gave the assistant DA a piece of my mind, and while I waited for the trial day to arrive, I remained in a constant state of fear. I could swear that I saw her once or twice over that period, but I was in such a frazzled state that it was possibly my imagination. She became all I thought about. My work suffered. Even in my dreams, she often took center stage. She refused several plea deals and insisted the jury would acquit her. I know it was all a stall tactic, and she was assembling all the elements that she would need to what I thought would be to disappear. And the first rumblings began during jury selection. She had not been present for the procedure. Although she wasn't required to be, it didn't bode well. Then when the trial began in earnest, her lawyer was finally forced to admit that he had lost contact with his client several weeks prior. Now today is October 28th as I write this, and she's been missing almost 2 months. I sit around wondering what my future may hold. Hopefully she's done the wise thing and is currently laying low halfway around the world, or something. On the surface, that appears to be the case. Yet for some reason, I'm not totally convinced. My former love interest is a highly successful and intelligent woman. It's largely what drew her to me from the beginning. I have a creeping suspicion that she may be focusing her vast resources into getting back at me. Whatever form that may take, I'm not really sure. Naturally, I fear she'll go to the conventional route and just end my life, likely by her own hand, maybe another stabbing. However, she is more than capable to go even further and extend my suffering indefinitely. And this is why I'm going to all the trouble to post my side of the story. I'm well aware I probably come off as a jerk in some circumstances, but I don't care. I just want a record of the truth to be available publicly should I disappear. My lawyer also has a copy in case I'm no longer around to testify on my own behalf. It's doubtless that law enforcement will eventually catch up with her at some point. I'm concerned it will be too late for me, though. So if you learn of the death or a disappearance of some unknown New York State attorney through the media, please remember what you read here. From the mid-1980s to the early 1990s, the rural South Korean city of Hwaseong was terrorized by a merciless and predatory serial killer. Between September of 1986 and April of 1991, a total of 15 women and girls were found bound, gagged, violated, and in most cases, strangled to death with an item of their own clothing, usually their socks, underwear, or pantyhose. The murders prompted the largest criminal investigation in South Korean history, with over 20 million man-hours spent poring over witness statements, analyzing crime scenes, and interviewing over 21,000 suspected culprits. The nightmare began on September 15th of 1986, when a 71-year-old woman named Lee Won-im disappeared while returning home from visiting her daughter. 4 days later, her family's worst fears were confirmed when her body was found dumped on some nearby farmland. Just over a month later, 25-year-old Park Yoon-suk vanished after a bus ride back from Songtan. Her body was found just 2 days later, naked and strangled, floating in a local canal. The murders continued month after month for years. Always the same type of victim, always murdered in the same way. It was quite clear that Hwaseong had a dangerous and determined serial killer on their hands. The only trouble was, how would they go about catching him? The Hwaseong murders are notorious all over South Korea for being the country's first modern serial killer, especially in the sense that a particular modus operandi was applied to all known victims. However, the investigation was so intense and far-reaching that, after just a month's worth of police work, the list of suspects had grown to include a mind-boggling 21,000 different people. On top of that, a whopping 40,000 people had their fingerprints taken, but the true list of suspects could potentially be narrowed down to the few hundred that actually had DNA samples taken from them. Even shorter is the list who had hair samples taken, which is down to a mere 180 different people. Given that the murders had occurred all within a 4-mile radius of downtown Hwaseong, hundreds of pairs of police officers and volunteers were positioned within just 100 meters of one another. Their job was to patrol the surrounding area, keeping an eye out for anyone suspicious. But the killer simply worked out where police presence thinned out, and attacked there instead. It seemed that not only were the police unable to prevent the killer from striking again, but the killer himself was unable to resist the urge to hunt and to kill. The first big breakthrough came in September of 1988, when police were able to commission a composite sketch of the suspect, one based on the witness statements of a bus driver and his conductor. He was wiry, a shorter man, aged between 24 and 28 years old, with a sharp nose and short cropped hair. Some victims also described him as having soft hands, which suggested he had a mostly sedentary occupation, possibly as an office or textile worker. This description was corroborated with existing carnal assault reports, and the conclusion was chilling. Their suspect had been engaged in venal, predatory activity for almost a decade prior to killing for the first time, and it became apparent that South Korean police were dealing with one of the most fiendish and prolific criminals in the country's short history. It also appeared that the killer had a bizarre fixation which influenced not only his choice of victims, but also the timing of his attacks. It was noted that the killer's victims had been women wearing red clothing, and that they had been targeted on rainy days. This led some female police officers to set traps for him. Walking alone in the greater Hwaseong area on rainy days while wearing items of red clothing. Yet it seemed the killer was wise to their ruse and avoided them altogether. The next major breakthrough came on July 27th of 1989, when analysis of a single hair found at one of the crime scenes led to the arrest of a 22-year-old male by the name of Yoon Sung Yao. Yet it was later revealed that this murder was totally unrelated to the others. And as positive as it was that police had caught themselves a murderer, the red clothing-obsessed serial killer was still on the loose, and the attempts to link all previous murders to their one suspect had arguably set the investigation back by years. Not only that, but it was later alleged that South Korean police had brutally beaten and tortured Yoon in their attempts to get a confession out of him. This meant that much of the evidence gained from his interrogations was completely inadmissible. And this caused a huge scandal with the South Korean police force. So much so that in December of 2019, police arrested 8 of the original investigators, charging them with falsifying documents, illegal detention, and physically abusing Yoon when he was in custody. It also became apparent that at least 4 possible suspects actually went so far as to take their own lives as a result of alleged police harassment. So, to say the police mishandled the case would be a grotesque understatement indeed. On the night of September 26, 1989, while the police were still investigating the Hwaseong serial killer, a home invasion occurred in the city of Suwon, just 13 miles from Hwaseong. The homeowner happened to be awake and confronted the armed burglar before calling the police. The man was arrested, identifying himself as Lee Chun-jae when questioned. And after a short trial in February of 1990, he was sentenced to 18 months in prison. Lee Chun-jae ended up being released after just 6 months, after an appeal hearing in which he claimed to have been the one who was attacked, and he'd simply run into the residence to seek shelter. Yet during those 6 months, something interesting happened. There was not a single new murder that could be attributed to the Hwaseong serial killer. Then just a few months after Lee Chun-jae's release, a 14-year-old girl was murdered whilst walking home from school on a rainy day, with investigators quick to note that she was carrying a red backpack. The killer was right under the noses of hundreds of homicide detectives working on the case, yet they failed to make any connections between Lee's imprisonment and the murderer's apparent hiatus. Lee Chun-jae remained quiet for a number of years, minimizing his murderous activities in the face of increasing police pressure. Yet in December of 1993, Lee Chun-jae's wife filed for divorce, citing irreconcilable differences. She was appalled by his prison sentence and noticed how he'd become increasingly withdrawn over the years that preceded his conviction. Little did she know, Her husband had been the very same murderous psychopath that had been terrorizing the Hwasong area, and leaving him would only cause the cauldron of evil inside of him to violently boil over. On January 13th of the following year, Lee Chun-jae contacted his 18-year-old sister-in-law, explaining that his soon-to-be ex-wife had forgotten a handful of her belongings. When his sister-in-law turned up to collect them, Lee Chun-jae dragged her inside, brutally violated her, then strangled the life from her. Then, in a sick display of false compassion, he approached his heartbroken father-in-law to offer his help in the search. It's truly horrifying to think that, despite his words, Lee Chun-jae was only there to soak up the family's suffering, to revel in the destruction and anguish he had wrought. Yet in the days that followed, police noted that on multiple occasions, Lee Chun-jae seemed to suggest that his sister-in-law had been abducted and murdered. This was before investigators had any inkling whatsoever of her fate, so the fact that he was so adamant on her abduction was highly suspicious. Lee Chun-jae was also heard to ask, "How many years in prison do you serve for violating someone and murder?" And it didn't take long until the police investigation was focused solely on him. Eventually, on January 18th of 1994, Lee Chun-jae was arrested as the prime suspect in his sister-in-law's murder, and although he initially denied all involvement, he was convicted and sentenced to death in May of the same year. Again, upon his imprisonment, the Hwasong serial killer apparently ceased to operate, but it would take 25 more years for them to connect the dots and realize that Lee Chun-jae was the monster that they had been looking for all along. On September 18th of 2019, South Korean police official announced that Lee Chun-jae was most likely the Hwasong serial killer. This was based on a DNA match taken from the underwear of one of the victims, and other evidence linked him to almost all of the others. All the police needed to do was coax a confession out of him, and given that he was already detained at Busan prison for the murder of his sister-in-law, investigators had direct, round-the-clock access to the man. It then just took over 2 weeks, but in early October, Lee Chun-jae confessed to killing 14 women and girls over a 6-year period. He also confessed to almost 30 carnal assaults, along with almost 100 attempted assaults that matched up with a number of unsolved reports. Psychologists noted that Lee displayed psychopathic tendencies by being unable to empathize with the victim's pain and suffering, and continuously showing off his crimes. One particularly remarkable aspect of this case is that before it was even solved, it became the basis for a popular South Korean movie directed by Bong Joon-ho, the same guy who directed the Academy Award-winning black comedy, Parasite. Song Kang-ho and Kim Sang-kyung star as Detective Park and Detective So, respectively, two of the detectives trying to solve the crime.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And the film ends with Detective Park looking straight at the camera, trying to spot the killer amongst the audience by using a special eye contact method. Obviously, it implied that the killer was still out there, maybe even watching the film among the audience in question, and audiences were terrified by such a realistic prospect. Fortunately for them, Lee Chun-jae was in prison for the murder of his sister-in-law, meaning moviegoers were safe from his predatory advances. But it definitely speaks to the morbid fascination society has with serial killers, how a horrifying series of murders can so fascinate us that we'll seek to glamorize and serialize it before the killer is even caught.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.